So our final presentation is by Dana Mora. Dana Mora is a project manager at the Department of Epidemiology and Prevention at Wake Forest University School of Medicine. And I want to say I'm particularly proud she's here because she started out as a summer intern at NIOSH how many years ago?
About 4 years ago.
So she's a real success story of our internship programs bringing new people into the field.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to talk about immigrant workers' evaluations of jobs in poultry processing, and I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Antonio Marin and Dr. Arker, which he's here right now, and Dr. Gribash and Dr. Sarah Quand. Okay, so I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. Okay, so an introduction. Immigrant workers are often concentrated in works that are termed as 3D, that is dirty, dangerous, and difficult jobs. They are often concentrated there because they're discriminated for those jobs, because they need the jobs, and because they lack power to complain about poor working conditions. There has been little research that documents these workers' assessments of these 3D jobs, but such research is important because it helps explain why these workers tolerate these poor conditions and suggest reasons why collective action is necessary to improve working conditions. So the objective of my presentation is to elicit workers' evaluations of the positive and negative aspects of their jobs. So just a little bit of background on poultry production. The consumption of chicken has increased exponentially over the past 4 decades, so that means that with more consumptions, there's more production and more workers are needed. North Carolina is the fourth largest chicken processing state in the United States. And the chicken processing plants are often in rural areas, and they are the top employers in those areas. The workers in the chicken processing industry are majority foreign-born, and they're mostly from Latin American immigrants. We have found that Latino poultry workers have a higher risk of prevalence of carpal tunnel syndrome, musculoskeletal, and scale illnesses. So our study took place in Western North Carolina in the 6 counties that are highlighted in blue, and Forsyth County that's highlighted in yellow is where we are located, our research team at Wake Forest University. Because this is a hard-to-reach population and we didn't have access to the poultry processing plants, we had to recruit our participants through churches, to community leaders, through tienda owners, and through community-based sampling. We conducted open-ended face-to-face interviews that lasted about an hour, and those interviews were conducted in Spanish from 2004 to about 2010. Participants were recruited from 3 different studies that we had that assess prevalence and incidence of disease and seek to understand what hazards chicken catchers had. So we were able to conduct 65 interviews among former and current poultry production and processing workers. The participants were between the ages of 18 and 68 years old, with a mean age of 37. A little bit more than half of the participants were males, mostly from Mexico and Guatemala, and they came from 3 different companies. Okay, so after analyzing the interviews, during the interviews, workers were asked what they thought was good about their job and what they thought was negative about their job. So when we were after analyzing the interviews, some patterns emerged. And the main thing that people thought was good about their job was their stability, the stability of their job. They really appreciated the fact that there's always going to be a check at the end of the week or at the end of every 2 weeks. The fact that they were always going to have work, whether it rained or not. They appreciated the fact that sometimes even they were able to work on the weekends. they value civility sometimes even above their health. They said that they were in pain, but that they were thankful because they had a job. The other thing that they found positive about their job was that they said it was good pay. Compared to other people that they knew that don't work in poultry, they have good pay. And as you can see from that quote, they say that some people that work in other industries will like to work in poultry, not because it's a good job, but because of the amount of money paid. It gives them money to be able to pay the bills at the end of the month. Another thing they liked was the benefits. Many of them were thankful that they had they have medical insurance, and for them and for their kids, and they only have to pay a minimal amount to go to the doctor. They also liked the fact that they got their vacation paid, and they got holidays paid too. And if they work holidays, they got paid time and a half. Good hours was especially important for those in chicken catching. These workers start their day about around 4 a.m. in the morning, and they end around noon. So they say that they enjoy those hours because they had time to spend with their family after they got out of work. And the last thing that people found good about their job is that it provided upward mobility. Many of them said that they had the chance to send money back to their families, and this gave their family the opportunity to, as you can see from this quote, they gave the family the opportunity, their siblings the opportunity to go to school, to have money for food and for clothes, something that wasn't there before, before they were able to start sending money back to their family. Many people also mentioned that because they had a stable job, they were able to have a house and have help their kids get through college. So that was another positive thing they found about their jobs. Okay, so now some of the negative aspects. So poultry processing is a dirty job. It's very physically demanding. Workers have to process about a chicken every 2 seconds. So they're often in a lot of pain, and workers say that it's a very hard job. They also said that even though there's some jobs that are not as hard within the poultry processing plant, they're all hard. And they don't like that about their job because they're always in pain. Another thing that they didn't like is the interaction they had with their bosses and peers. They feel that their supervisors always want them to work faster, and sometimes they will yell at them to do their job faster. And also they felt pressure from their peers to work fast as well, because they didn't want their peers to think that they were being lazy and not doing their job. And also they mentioned that other peers that maybe had more seniority treated them badly, that they will pressure them to do the work faster. And so they were very resentful about that, because they couldn't understand why somebody that had gone through that same process was putting that pressure on them. They're also concerned about their health. So many of them say that their arms are always hurting, their hands, their feet. And they're also worried as to what consequences their work they're doing right now is going to have on their future health, whether they're going to have to get surgery later down the line, or how this work is going to affect their future health. Okay, so in conclusion, workers describe good and bad aspects of their job, but reading the interviews and going through the interviews, it was obvious to us that even when the workers were describing the good aspects, they did it with resignation. So they will say, yeah, I have, even though I'm always in pain, I have to be thankful because this is a stable job, or because I get a paycheck at the end of the week. These workers tend to step in these jobs because, as I said before, these companies are often in rural areas where they're the top employers, so they don't really have many choices of employment outside of poultry. And also because they are often undocumented workers, they don't know English, and they have low levels of education, they're not all as likely to be able to find a job. Because of the some things, because of immigration, because people are scared of reporting injuries, their workers are unlikely to work towards eliminating the bad aspects of their jobs that cause occupational injury and illness. And so it's important that existing rules and regulations are enforced and that ergonomic standards are implemented, mandated and enforced in order to help these workers. And I just wanted to leave you with a quote that I think describes pretty well how these workers feel about their job. So this is a woman, and she said, "It's hard, and I get tired there. In my case, sometimes the chicken comes through cut incorrectly, and removing the buns hurts my hands. My hands hurt. And there are days when my hands are numb. Sometimes I hit them on the side of the bed so that I start to have feeling again. I feel that my fingers start to swell and I go to sleep. Everyone complains about that. But as I said, that is a secure job. It depends upon each person whether they can stand it or not." Any questions?
Great. So I think we'll open it up now for questions to any of the presenters, or to all of the presenters. There was a lot of overlapping themes. Yeah, Mary. So I'll answer the second one first. We weren't surprised to hear this at all, because we had done about 12 focus groups in the development of the handbook. So we had had a lot of formative research beforehand, and that was the recurrent thing that we heard. You know, are there risks? No, no, no. I mean, it was I mean, certainly there would perhaps be a way of getting at the issues a little bit differently, but framing it in the traditional way we think about risk perception and in the question is phrased, it didn't surprise us. I think the point you raise is interesting, is maybe we're not quite asking the question right and need to think better about how we approach measuring risk. So in terms of recruiting people, we developed this card that looked very much like the social marketing card that you saw. So we sent that to the home of everyone who was paid. So since this is a county program, we had the name and address of everyone who had been paid the previous month through the program. And so, you know, it was a fortunate situation where we actually had a home address and could recruit people. And as I said, of the 4,000 we sent out, we only got about 10% people volunteering, but that also sort of didn't surprise us. So, David.
I think she was working more with African American communities. No, often the churches that we used were Latino churches, and so they weren't really integrated with the American community. So they didn't really have a relationship with the poultry processing companies. So no, we didn't face those problems. Thank you.
Yeah, so she had asked if we found stress as a risk. I mean, we definitely heard that expressed in terms of demands. As, you know, we still have a lot more analysis to do. What we have done is looked at whether various demand control and, you know, the social support, the typical indicators were related to risk awareness, and it wasn't. And then we looked to see if demand control, social support modified some of the findings that we had in the pre-post intervention, and it didn't. But we have much more analysis, so I wouldn't say those things don't have any relationship, but not in the analyses we've done so far. So, yeah, she was asking what the nature of the social support was. So we had a number of different kinds of social support. So we had some in terms of social support from your client, but then there were other things in terms of how easy is it for you to get information from the county, from the union, from other sorts of groups. So we looked at both direct social support as well as institutional social support. Did you want to, yeah. You have to come.
Sorry, I'm Linda Ayala, and I helped with the research project. But I just thought to expand a little bit less on the evaluation piece, but that the stress was a huge issue for home care workers and it's its own chapter within the book. But then also, as we've done a lot of the workshops, it's been very interesting. If we focus, we'll always choose one or two of the hot topics to kind of focus on. And the stress is not only as far as job demand, it's about the nature of the relationship and the concern and the and facing death and facing, you know, all those issues go in. So it's yeah. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm just going to add one thing back to that question of risk awareness, Mary, that you asked, and whether we asked the question kind of what's behind the fact that the risk awareness is so low. And I think that is a kind of, you know, maybe we phrase the question differently, and that would be interesting to evaluate. But I do think there's something also about just the nature of this kind of work. When people are working in the home, they're doing work that we all do anyway. You know, and just to say, I think it is relevant to highlight the fact that about 50%, Linda, I think, is that correct, are caring for family members. Oh, more, 60 or 70, okay, so kind of large percentage of people are caring for their mother, their child, their husband, their wife. So I think there is something about the nature of that job that allows people to take it outside of the realm of traditional work where you think there are sort of hazards to the work we just all do because we have to do and it's the right thing to do. And I think that how that kind of feeling about your work gets mediated both to risk awareness and to asking for changes and to feeling like it's an appropriate use of scarce time and energy to think about your own health when you're caring for somebody whose health seems to be so much worse than yours. I think those are the kinds of things that are really challenging when we do work with this population. And I do think that in all, as we were saying, in the workshops that we've done and in the focus groups we did, and we worked with people over long periods of time, and we just saw remarkable evolution in that understanding that, you know, we open up with the kinds of activities that many of you in this room have done, from body chart, like where do you feel symptoms, and all the kinds of things we typically do to elicit people's understanding of risk. And, you know, the first time we introduce those questions, it's just like, what are you even talking about? But over time, that awareness and being validated that it's okay to care about your own health and those are not in conflict with each other, that you can be healthy on the job and care about others as well. I mean, as we start to grapple with those, I think the awareness goes up. So it's just a very complicated question with this kind of these kinds of workers who, on the whole, are incredibly inspiring about how committed they are to the people that they're caring for, and how you maintain your own health in that environment is something we're working on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I can answer for our project. The question was, did we use incentives to encourage participation of the workers in this? And we did, both in our focus groups as well as the intervention. So people were paid $80 for, if they participated in all phases from the two questionnaires and the training, and that was kind of staggered across various components of the evaluation. And actually the whole issue of incentives, we can hear from the others too. It's a big question of how you set the incentive level, because in this case we were collaborating with the union and the county in this, and so, you know, on the one hand, as researchers, you want to have a pretty good incentive so you have good participation. But, you know, if you give too high an incentive, that kind of sets a precedent. And then when you leave, as people that you've been working with are left to continue to do programs, it kind of sets a standard for what people expect. And so we had a lot of discussion back and forth about what would be fair, and we tried to choose levels that were consistent with what both the union and county provided as reimbursement to people when they participated in other kinds of activities. So I don't know if you guys want to...
So for our project, this came from three different projects, but we gave the workers $20 to do the interviews with us, but it was really hard to recruit participants. What we had to do, especially for one of the projects I can speak of, we collected data at different clinics on Sundays, and so to encourage people to come to this clinic, we offer services such as glucose screening or blood pressure screenings, and so that encouraged people, for them and for their families, so that encouraged people also to come. And then once they came and they trust us, I guess, that they saw that we were there to help as much as we could, they were more likely to conduct those interviews with us. And also the people that were conducting the interviews were people that were members of the communities where they lived in. So that helped a lot, I think.
We did pay $20, but we were hoping that will give them some incentive. But some people refused to participate because they are too busy to schedule an interview with us. For those who agreed to participate, some of them they wanted to talk. They want to talk about their experience. So it's a relief, like a mental health counseling, so to speak, for them. So some people, because of that reason, they wanted to participate. And also, we actually look at the mechanism, the way they come into our study. We have a lot of snowball referrals. So once they, really similar to what Dana was talking about, once they know this, they can trust us and they understand, you know, participating in this research is not going to hurt them, then they will refer their family and friends to participate. So though the $20 meant something for some people, but wasn't really a big deal for many of them who participated.
Yeah, actually, we had a similar experience. The two telephone surveys were a half hour each, and we had budgeted it with the interviewer, the company that did the interviewers for us, for half hour interviews. And what they found is once they got a worker on the phone, it was, you know, boy, they had a lot to say. And so, you know, they went on and on. And actually, the crisis we ran into is how to fund the company doing the interviews, because the interviews ended up being like twice as long as we had budgeted. So I think the experience is, you know, the incentive gets people interested in participating, but once they're there, you really don't have much trouble getting them to spend the time with you and share the information. Other questions? You both asked questions before, so is there anyone who hasn't yet asked a question, or we'll go back to Mary? Okay, so we'll do Mary, and I don't know your name.
So Mary's question is whether the Chinese immigrant food service workers have some sense about workers' rights and compensation. We didn't really ask those questions in this particular study, but the prior study, a qualitative study we did, they didn't really know much about those kind of workers' rights issues and compensations. And we then sort of go back to your earlier question about the risk. We asked about some of these issues. And in the quality research we did, they didn't even think it's risky to work in restaurants. And I think that's probably what she was talking about. They think this is just like, you know, cooking in your kitchen. So what's the big deal cooking in your kitchen? So they reconceptualize risk in a very different way. I cannot remember the word we changed, but we had to ask the question in a different way to capitalize that. But most of the time, the workers' right compensation, even some people didn't even really ask how much money you will be paid at hourly rate. That's a good question. I don't know if they did want to know or did not. I don't have the actual information for you, but that's a good question to ask, whether they wanted to know but they were hesitate to ask, or they just were glad to have a job, and so they didn't really feel like they should even ask. But some of them were referred into the food service industry because of their family relatives were working in the field, so it kind of helped to have some information from their relatives too. So they may not have to ask, or they may not even thought about asking about those information.
Yeah, actually that was something we were really interested in, and you know, we hypothesized that there might be differences, and so far we have a lot more analysis to do. We haven't found that to be an important variable at all. So in the home care program, two-thirds were taking care of a family member and one-third wasn't, and she asked if there was any difference between those, and so far we haven't found any difference. Other questions? Yeah. You got to speak up. It's a big room with a noisy fan. Maybe you could explain what you mean by, you know, fatigue in what way. So long working hours. Yeah, you can answer too. She was question about long working hours and if that became a risk for injuries. And if we looked at it, one of the things that we asked is, because one of the problems in home care is that if someone's asking you to do things, it's hard to leave at the end of the time, especially if it's a family member. So even though people were paid for a certain number of hours, almost everyone routinely said they worked extra hours beyond the hours they were paid for. And so we looked at whether answering yes to that variable predicted anything like risks and other sorts of things. And we found that the vast majority of people did work extra hours, but so far it didn't have a role in any of the outcomes that we were looking at.
I'm not sure we have looked at the association between the amount of hours workers have work and the injuries they have. I don't know, Tom. We did collect some information about poultry workers and how long they work, what time they started their shift and what time they ended. But I don't think that we've looked at how that affects their injury rates. Yeah.
With poultry workers, most of them
So, for the poultry workers, their inclusion criteria were that they were working full-time for a particular company. And so most of them were working 35 to 40 hours a week and some overtime. So, yeah, they were tired, but they weren't working excessively long hours, like 60-hour weeks for the most part. So there's that. For other workers, and depending on the industry, so for our construction workers, when we ask them, a lot of times in our qualitative data, fatigue is a problem because they come to work tired from doing other things other than work, like staying out all night drinking. For the farm workers, it depends on the time of the season, because late season, August, when they're cropping tobacco, they'll start it before dawn and work to 9 o'clock at night, which also affects our ability to collect data. We have started to measure sleep and sleepiness. These guys all sleep really well. They're really, really tired. So we're not sure how to progress with that research. But I'm not sure that answers your question. But really looking at, we don't really have measures of fatigue.
Any other questions? Okay, I just want to remind people that this session was brought to you by the Occupational Health and Safety section, and we encourage you to join our section. Even though you're a member of another section, you can sign up for free and be a member of our section. That helps us get more sessions at the conference and do the work that we do. So we have some forms here that you could fill out, and it doesn't cost you any extra money above your normal dues. And thanks for everyone coming.